This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
I felt when we set the board where the strengths were compared to some of the needs, perceived needs, whatever they are, of our roster, I thought some of those matched. You don't know how it's going to fall. There's a couple of times where you're going that ended up being defense. You're going, it could be an offense, could be a defense. You're looking as you're getting close. And it just, you never know. I can tell you 100% it wasn't going into it, hey, we have to get X number of defensive players out of this draft. As I said yesterday, I did think the way the board was stacked, where the strengths of the board were, two of our first three picks would be, I felt pretty good, would land up that we would have a defensive player there that we liked that filled a need as well at the value. We went up to get TJ because we had him higher on our board. And in our minds, if we have him up there, we feel like at least a few other teams are. Everybody grades for their own team, and that filled a need for us.
Bill Sheehan, Brandon Bean. I do appreciate what he says there. You don't know what's going to happen. It's one of the things I plan to ask him when we talk at 8:30 about, you know, you do all these mock drafts. The Bills do mock drafts, and it occurs to me, you come out of those mocks and like, how do we like this board? Like, oh, there's probably a mock where they took a receiver. There's probably a mock where they end up with a safety. There's probably a mock where they end up with two defensive tackles or two defensive ends. You know, this, you do respond to the draft. You don't plan it. Yeah. You can only do what happens. So we'll talk to Brandon Bean at 8:30. We'll talk with Sal in an hour. Right now, Jeremy and Joe, we're talking to you about the Bills draft, and we have some open phone lines at 803-0550 to jump in with a couple already on hold, so we'll get to that. Before that, I want to mention one other thing. This is something we are not going to yell about now, but we might yell about in the future.
Okay.
Nike and the NFL announcing Rivalries, a new and exciting uniform and fan gear program. Basically, what's going to happen here is the statement from Chief Revenue Officer at the NFL. Together with Nike, we're harnessing the power of rivalry matchups to bring fan excitement and community pride to the next level. Specially designed player uniforms and limited edition fan gear. We will embark on a journey that inspires competitive spirit and reveals the winner in all of us. That's pretty fancy words there.
A lot of words.
Right.
Basically, I love uniform PR releases
like
that.
Each participating team in Rivalries, and the Bills are one of these teams. It's Bills, Dolphins, Patriots, and Jets.
Uh-huh.
The first wave will come from the AFC East and the NFC West. So my guess is it's Jets, Patriots, and Bills, Dolphins. And the NFC West has matchups as well. Each team will wear a unique Rivalries uniform with designs rooted extensively in local community insights during a single home game against a division rival. These designs have been brought to life by pulling inspiration from the history of each market and the aspects of the community that only that team's city embodies. So, you're getting a new uniform for a game this year.
Right. That sounds to me like it's something brand new, right?
Yes.
Not like they're wearing the 60s throwbacks. Like, they're going to have a brand new uniform.
Yes. So, there will be...
There's a lot of words, though, that kind of are, I feel like, designed to not let you know anything about what it's going to look like.
Well, doesn't it sound like the NBA or the MLB City Connect? This has the Red Sox.
Okay.
The Red Sox wear blue and yellow, the colors of the Boston Marathon.
Right. The Miami Heat wear like Miami Vice uniforms,
yes,
where like pink lettering with blue outline. Yeah, which is in their colors.
We might spend some time in the coming weeks with ideas,
like a
concepts.
Yeah,
it could be totally brand new colors. It could be anything.
Chicken wing jersey.
There it could be.
No. Oh, we'll smite. You're right. We'll yell about that in the future.
Like I said, we'll all
I will fight anybody that just tells me to wear a chicken wing uniform. Come on. You could do so much better.
Everybody
than that.
Everybody knows.
It's low-hanging fruit.
It'll be a tribute to Niagara Falls, Joe. That's what it'll be. Anyway, 803-0552. Get some calls in here on the draft. What do you think about the draft? They have gone big for the defense, which I think everybody agrees needed some work, needed some help. And my takeaway from it all is that the front seven, it better be nasty. This is the kind of draft that this much attention to the defense, the first time they went defense five picks in a row to start since 2006, with a defensive head coach, a free agency period that was mostly defense. If McDermott's defense next year isn't good, really good, dynamically good, I think the shouting about him gets louder. And if they regress on offense, which you might make a case that they should, I think Josh Allen is regression proof. Whatever. I just think that
he's big regression
proof. Sure, sure. But this
any
is,
regression is modest.
This is not $120 million on Von Miller. This contract better work. This is your offseason was about helping your defense. And if your head coach, who has built really good defenses in the past, if he doesn't have answers this time, people are going to wonder when he will, if they don't already wonder that. So we'll get some phone calls in, 803-0550. And, of course, the receiver conversation is right there for anybody that wants to have it. Butch on the east side is first up this hour. Hey, Butch, good morning.
Good morning, my guys. I love you. I love MSG. I love WGR. So all the fans who listen, Butch from the east side, I love you. I'm going to get right to the point. I want to take my hats off to Brandon Bean and his staff for what they did these last 3 days. Because like he said before, a lot of times players be having ratings nationwide, but we rate players based off how they fit us and what we do. Got to respect that. Now, saying that is, when you were just speaking about the pressure, and I'm not using the word pressure, but what Sean McDermott has going in based off with the players he got on his draft, me personally, on paper only, this is the best draft that Brandon Bean has ever had. I mean, I'm talking about all the way through. I'm not talking about a Josh Allen picking players. I'm talking about all the way through. Now, that's on paper. Now, let me get to my point, and thanks for taking my call, because I know you got a lot of callers. We were speaking about wide receivers. I want Brandon Bean, when he gets on to speak to you guys, about two receivers that he has that's really talented. Kelly Akari out of Mississippi State. Hal Presley out of Baylor. Big 6'3 receiver, 210, 6 foot receiver, 199, run a 4.42. Let me explain something. They didn't have any quarterbacks their senior year, but they have talent. You bring those two, along with Palmer you got from the Chargers, you're going to give Terrell Shavers a real opportunity. Coleman's going to come back better. You also have a Shakir, and you have Samuel. That's eight guys you're going in with that's going to make this roster. Those three players, along with, I might give Daryl Porter Jr. out of Miami, the cornerback they signed late because his old coach is our defensive backs coach. He'll play special teams. But now I'm going to say that, then I'm going to say this, and I'm done, and thanks again, is that last year, Sean McDermott had to make the transition of hiring young coaches because the young players are ready to play. They're not ready to sit. They're ready to play. We went through that transition last year. We almost got to the game. This year, they're going to play right away. That secondary, with all those secondary young players coming in, it's going to be really competitive. But thanks so much for taking my calls. But based on that wide receiver room, gentlemen, I want you guys to pause. Relax. We're going to be all right. Thank you, guys. I love you.
Thanks, Butch. Due respect, I'm never going to plan on UDFAs making the team and making a difference. I'm never going to do it. Ever. When they make a difference, good, they're there. I'm never going to plan on that. There's no reasonable reason to ever look at UDFAs like they're going to make a difference. And some do. But right now the best UDFA the Bills have on their offense is it Tyrell Shavers? Who is it? Who's their best?
Like somebody that wasn't drafted?
Yeah. I mean, Shavers was not drafted and has been on this team forever.
Was Ty Johnson drafted? He actually might have been.
Okay. But Shavers has been with the team and had a really great camp and showed up and he had one catch from Mitch Trubisky.
Ty Johnson was drafted, by the way.
There you go. So UDFAs, no thanks. I'm not going to plan on it. Not to say that it can never happen, but just like never plan on it. This is Duke Williams 2.0. Like.
Yeah. And should I plan on Coleman being better? like he just said? Should I plan on that? I would be hopeful of that. I don't know that I should. I mean, it feels like they are planning on that.
I would expect I would expect him to be better. I don't think it's crazy to expect him to be better. He was showing signs of being pretty good. The question is,
how is he better?
Not just how is he better, but where is the ceiling and what is the skill set? Because I expect him to be better and be a pretty nice receiver for this team, and Allen to trust him and throw him the ball in high leverage situations. One thing I don't expect from him is to be a separator and be a true number one. I expect defenses to continue to throw one defender over there until he starts mossing everyone, and then maybe he'll get more attention. But what his game was last year was single coverage all the time, tight windows, winning contested catches, and running mostly go routes. That was his game last year.
But even like where the growth will have to come, it could be a couple different areas. It could be him as a separator. It would also be him as a more consistent jump ball winner. He got 37% of those last year. It was not nowhere near the top of the league. In fact, it was closer to the bottom. If I'm a defense, I know my game plan against Keon Coleman. I'm going to say, yeah, one-on-one, if I lose 37% of them, whatever, I'm fine. I'm taking that every day of the week. I'm going to lose a few to him, but he's not. Travis Hunter won 69% of his jump balls in college. Like that's not the number Coleman is living at on that. So to me, he either needs to be better at it or he needs to become more of a separator to do what Butch is talking about, where he's being relied upon more.
How would the Bills defend Coleman? They'd throw Christian Benford at him, and that's the end of the story, right?
Yeah, that's it.
It wouldn't be Hairston.
They would not put Maxwell. Yeah. Maxwell Hairston probably will not do well against him in practice, I would bet. Unless he's running go balls.
Right. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Yeah, I think it's totally possible that a couple things. Palmer has more in there to show, and Coleman improves. Shakir, I think we've seen Shakir at what his best is, which is a really great yak player, a consistent, efficient receiver. He does get a lot of manufactured touches, and that's where the scheme is important. Like, the Bills build in touches for Shakir behind the line, and he's super effective. Kincaid, maybe I guess for the next couple months, what I'll be doing is living on the idea that, all right, sorry about those first 2 years. Here comes Dalton Kincaid in his fully formed self. And here he comes as a feature of this offense to be the matchup problem that we said he was going to be. That's the most likely thing. Is that it? The most likely thing that makes their offense more dynamic, more reliable? I mean, again, it was a great offense last year. I don't think anybody disputes that.
I think we already saw the blueprint. Does there have to be a different blueprint? And it's going to be dependent on whether you can repeat what happened last year. The blueprint for them to be a top three offense in the league again is to do what they just did, which is don't turn the ball over. Don't have any negative plays.
Have a great run game.
Have a great run game. Take no sacks because your offensive line is great and your quarterback doesn't take any in the first place. And have some yak plays.
And I feel like
once every two games, Allen will have an amazing, he's scrambling to the sideline, heave it down the field play that you can't believe.
All that's believable still, right?
All that, to me,
is believable.
But if you drop back in any of those different areas, that's when, if you're not protecting the ball quite as often as you did last year because it was historically great, then, how do I make up for that? Maybe it's Kincaid taking a big step forward. If my run game isn't quite as efficient as it was last year, where do I make up for that? Well, maybe Coleman's a little bit better of a separator. Like, there's going to be a give and take here. My question will be that if anything from last year takes a small step back, is anybody else, like we're talking Kincaid or Coleman, going to be able to move up? And I know it sounds like I'm just putting all that emphasis on the pass game, but that's because I think the pass game is the only area that could see improvement. Answer me this. Anyone think the run game could be better than it was last year? Anyone think the Bills' run game could be better than it was last year? Because I would say no. I think it was great. It was one of the top units in the league. I think that's about as good as it can get. Anyone think they could be better at not turning the ball over?
No,
they were historically great. If there is improvement, it has to come from the pass game.
The other answer to this is that the defense will just be better. They'll get off the field on third down. You might regress a little bit in how often you protect the ball, but your defense will be not 29th in the NFL on third down or whatever it was.
Right.
They'll just be a better defense. They'll get off the field. They'll give the ball to Allen more. And that's what Hairston said. I'm here to give Josh Allen the ball. Like, let's get to work. So that's part of your answer.
Yep.
803-0550-1888-550-2550.
The chat says Alec Anderson, by the way, is their best undrafted free agent.
Okay. Very good.
Although, did he just lose his job?
To the blocking tight end?
He's been, the six offensive linemen's kind of been like their blocking tight end. If they just drafted an elite blocking tight end. I'm just guessing. I have no idea.
No, I don't think he lost his job. But Alec Anderson, it took how many years for him to show up and play a small role?
Like three or two or three, yeah.
803-0550. I mean, maybe not a small role, a big role for what they do. Defensively, like, that's what's going to be exciting. Training camp this year will be about who's getting to the quarterback. You know, some of the scouting reports. Let's get to some of the scouting reports. We should do that and get some more calls as well. Max Harrison, Thursday night, speedy, slight, smaller guy. You know, not a big corner, but a small, fast corner. Ball skills, aggressive. Reason to like Harrison quite a bit. Sanders, TJ Sanders. The scouting report on Sanders is, like, next to Ed Oliver in pass rushing situations, you want to win from the middle. Sanders has a lot of pass rushing chops. He's not quite an Ed Oliver clone, but it could work out really well in pass rushing situations. Landon Jackson will be interesting to talk about because he wins with power a lot, and one of the knocks on him from the draft process was he doesn't really have a lot of great bend, but he has a lot to like. So,
yeah.
I mean, how hard would it be for Landon Jackson to move past A.J. Epenesa in the depth chart?
I feel like they're similar. In my mind, they feel like similar types of players. So I don't know that it would be that hard. I mean, they have so many edge rushers right now that do they all make the team? Maybe they all could. Bosa, Rousseau, Hoyt, Epenesa, Jackson, Solomon. That's six. I think they've kept six before, but that's about the limit. I don't think they're doing more than that. So I think they could all make it, but can they all have a role? And that's a better question, because if Jackson looks like, okay, this is a tall, rangy edge defender, it's going to be good against the run game and set the edge, and sure, he's a little stiff, but give you a little bit in the pass rush, then how much do I need A.J. Epenesa at his current salary? Because he's one of these guys that we've talked about, if there was a bigger move to pop up somewhere and they needed to clear some space, I feel like his name often comes up as someone they could do the post-June 1 with and clear some room. So I feel like they have a lot of options at edge. I still wonder if any of them actually come to fruition, though, right? Like, they don't have a guy they've added at that position where it's like, oh, you know this dude is a surefire, going to show up and be great for you all year. Bosa is the closest to that, but him, it's the injuries. You just don't know that he'll be available to that extent. And the rest of them, it's like, they played a volume game, I feel like. They took five swings at it on the defensive line, and I feel like the odds are that something is going to hit.
Right.
I don't know which it is, though.
If they don't have a front four, and this is Butch's point about playing younger players, we'll talk about this with Sal. They've never been against playing younger players if the younger players can play.
Right.
And you might think, well, they should have trusted guys like James Cook earlier or guys like Shakir earlier, but for every
defense, I mean, Rousseau played right away, didn't he? And so did Epenesa and these guys.
For every they don't play a young guy, there's a young guy that they did play.
Yeah.
So I think it's a bit of a myth or maybe an overblown idea that they don't play their young guys.
Yeah, like who did they just drafted? Would anybody expect isn't going to see the field?
I think Harrison plays.
I think Harrison plays.
He's going to be out Trey White. TJ Sanders is definitely going to play and be in the mix.
I think Jackson will play.
I think he will definitely play. That might be
in
part.
I think Walker probably will play too.
Well, think about those two defensive picks, rounds two and three. I mean, with Ogunjobi and Hoyt out for six games.
They kind of have to.
Like, they I wonder if there's a little bit of this, Joe. Do they feel like they have an extended ramp-up time for some of these younger players? You have to play early on.
Right.
And you know, this might be a rough comparison, but think about a quarterback. Josh Allen goes in earlier than he's supposed to, and this is his rookie year. Then he gets hurt, goes out, comes back, and what is he when he comes back? Better.
Yeah.
There's you got your on-the-job training, and then you left for a little while, and then you're back in. When Ogunjobi and Hoyt come back from their suspensions – those guys are going in, and maybe some of these rookies or younger guys or depth guys come out and have to start competing for those spots. It's just interesting that those two missing in the early six games make the Bills' number game not too tough. Maybe It's April 28th, and here I am saying week 7's going to come, and the Bills are going to have to trade a defensive player for somebody because their numbers game, we have talent here, and Hoyt and Ogunjobi are coming back.
Yeah, that's if everybody was healthy.
That's right, that's right. 803-0550. Mo in New Jersey up next. Hey, Mo.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Basically, I don't want to get too crazy about the Bills draft picks because you never really know what these players are going to pan out to anyway. You know, I do focus on maybe the top three picks. And, you know, obviously all three defense, given the late defense of last year, I don't disagree with it. But at the same time, it's hard to ignore the fact that they ignored the offense. And, yes, we have Josh Allen. He's great. He needs help. You guys brought it up earlier in the show. One possession to win the game against Kansas City, we couldn't get it done. And that, to me, was, you know, eye-opening, right? Especially against that Kansas City defense. That's not that good. But that being said, I've never been the biggest McDermott fan. I love what he's done here, and I don't discredit it. But this draft, they essentially gave him all the tools he needed to get his job done. And there's no more excuses for me. If we cannot get over this hump, right? He might need 1 or 2 years with this draft class. Fine. If we cannot get over this hump, then we really need to think about what are we doing? Because we are wasting the prime of Josh Allen's career. And as much as I want to say, yes, defense wins championships, that's the cliche that you always hear. Look at what the Eagles did to the Chiefs defense. They went over the top. They had wide receivers. They just got behind the defense. They had, you know, Devontae Smith, A.J. Brown. These are not guys drafted in the fifth, sixth, seventh round. These are guys that were drafted at the top of their class for a reason. They are playmakers that can make things happen. So as much as I love what McDermott has done for us, the time is now. The time is up. Like, let's go. Let's get it done. There's no more excuses.
Thanks, Mo. I tend to agree that, you know, sometimes it's about perception. And, Joe, sometimes whatever. I mean, Everybody Eats came right after Diggs left, and the whole year was about proving that Josh Allen didn't need a number one, and Josh Allen's an MVP-caliber quarterback, and then Josh wins the MVP. So, you know, how we talk about Josh changes. And it's just about perception. It's just about narratives. While the teams don't really care about that, and they can say they don't care about that, there's no denying that if this defense has a mid-year, that more people will be calling about McDermott than maybe normally do. It's not game management anymore. He's pretty good at game management. It's not about punting and two-point conversions. It's about, do you have answers against the teams in your way to win the Super Bowl? And in reality, against the Chiefs, they almost never have the answers. And against the Ravens, they didn't really have the answer. They got a little bit lucky in that game. The Ravens went up and down the field on them fairly easily. And they got out with a win. They won the turnover battle 3-0. Two of those turnovers were gifts. So it's just to say, if this defense doesn't have the chops to get off the field on third down and be top 10 in the league with this coach, with these investments, I just think that the noise gets a lot louder for him.
Well, the loudest it would get for me is because he got tons of heat for 13 seconds. And not just... Well, actually, you know what? If you really think about it, the reaction to his defense is getting picked apart by Kansas City. The first time it happens in the playoffs, it's we feel good. We're on cloud nine. They made the AFC Championship game. We've arrived. Everyone felt pretty good after that, even though they lost. And then 13 seconds, so much more attention got paid to the game management decisions than the fact that the defense actually got torched. Not to say that they skated on that.
Yep.
They got blasted for the defense, too. But I feel like the number one... you know, culprit at that was, what were you doing with the game management decisions?
Yep.
So we weren't as focused on the defense. And then the last two times they've lost, where the Chiefs have showed up and not elite level Chief offenses have showed up and picked you apart, it's kind of been a little bit of, well, you didn't have your linebackers. You didn't have everything at your disposal. And then last year it was, well, Benford got hurt right away, and you had to play Kyrie Elam, and Hamlin was playing safety, and you couldn't really play the man coverage that you wanted because you didn't have the personnel for it. There has kind of been these built-in, and some of them actually valid, excuses for why they haven't performed. Whereas if this happens where they invest everything in their defense, they make all these picks, I'm looking right now what they've done this offseason. They spent $32 million just for this year, first, second, third, fourth, sixth all on the defense. If they do all of that and it looks the exact same, then that's when the heat comes. Because now there's nothing else to look at. Now it's you had everything at your disposal. You didn't have your linebackers. No more you didn't have, you know, Benford. They have nine corners, I feel like they would trust more.
I'm glad you mentioned Benford, because in that $34 million, you know what you did not include?
This is just players they added.
Right, three extensions to guys you've identified as corner pieces.
Right.
And Benford, Rousseau, and Bernard.
Right, so if it were to happen again, it would be the loudest I think it's ever been, about the defense specifically.
Right. For me, that's where this postseason might have changed things, and this year's Chiefs season might have changed things. The Chiefs offense only looked good in one postseason game. And that was the game against the Bills. It was the only game they looked good. They did not look good against Houston. Who did they play before that? They had the bye. They played Houston, then the Bills, then the Eagles. They only looked good one time.
Yeah.
803-0550 was an offense that was gettable, and the Bills couldn't get them. So now we'll see. The Bills add all these defensive pieces, but the target always moves. I mean, I don't know if the Chiefs offense will be as lackluster as it has been, or if you'll be trying to stop Cincinnati or Baltimore or whoever. 803-0550. A lot of things to like about the Bills draft. We're talking about it with you. A lot of questions to ask of Brandon Bean and Sal as well. Sal coming up at 8 and Brandon Bean at 8:30. Join us. We have open lines wide open here on WGR.